All is in divine order, 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 all is in divine order. That sounds like it's something, isn't it? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today, all is in divine order. Now, we have said that before, and so when we record this, well, let's say all is in divine order also. Here?
All is in divine order.
Also.
Also.
We have used all is in divine order for a thought for today before, and if we put this on there now, okay, it'll cancel out the other one, and the other one will no longer be in our archives. Okay. So we have to say all is in divine order also.
Also.
Okay.
Okay.
All is in divine order also. Okay. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean that all is in divine order? No. I think that we should have a contest. And the contest says, what does it mean, all is in divine order? What does it mean to you, to you, to you, to all, each of us? What does it mean, all is in divine order? No. Okay, I'll ask you another question. This is really a conundrum. It's a conundrum. You know what a conundrum is? One of those questions that's hard to get an answer for. If the tree falls in the forest, and there's no one there to hear it make a noise, does it make a sound? Yeah? Okay, now. This is a conundrum. 2 times 2 equals 4. That's a conundrum. Who says that 2, T-W-O, means 1, 2, you know, two items, and times means multiplication? Who says it says multiplication? Well, these are just terms we've given to it. And then another 2, T-W-O, or two items times two items equals, and who says equals means something, you know, that it equals something, it's supposed to be what it is, equals 4. Well, now, if you lay the two items together, two items and add them up, you go 1, 2, 3, 4, and there's 4. Now, 2 times 2 is what?
4.
How can you make a multiplication, 2 times 2 is 4, and have 4 items laying together and plus them together and have them be 4. Now, here's one. Take the big old number 1 and multiply that by anything, and what do you have? Whatever you're multiplying it against. Mm-hmm. 1 times 5 equals what?
5.
And 4 times 1 equals what?
4.
How interesting, isn't it? I mean, that 1 doesn't mean a thing, but it does mean something, because it means 1. How many times should you take your pills during the day? Once. How many pills should you take? 4. So how many pills should you take a day? 4 times 1 is 4. Okay, now, well, you're supposed to take 2 pills 2 times a day. Then how many pills should you take? 4. How many times a day should you take them? 2. And how many pills should you take? 2 each time, or 4 pills? Now, who says that this mathematical conundrum is truth? Who says where this comes from? Out of what did this evolve? Pythagoras and all of his mathematicians who lived back in the early, early days, they came up with all sorts of interesting conclusions of what numbers are to mean and what math is to mean and how to use them and how to do them. Now, can you imagine the fun that you would have, you, as a normal, ordinary being on the face of the earth, and your boss says, okay, here's your job for today. I need to have an alphabet. Give me an alphabet. And you say, well, okay, what's the alphabet for? Well, the alphabet is to write a language. Well, what's the language for? A language is to express ourselves. Well, what's expressing ourselves? Ooh, goo, ga, ga, boo, me, bra, boo, wee, you know? And what are we going to do? Now, what sort of sounds are going to give to these alphabetical symbols, A, B, C, or you know, the Greek, the Hebrew, and the Italian, and all the other nations of the world? They have different letters. In Russia, they have symbols for letters that we've never seen before. And look at these crazy Swedish people. My goodness. And the Finlandic people, and the people from Norway and so on. What kind of language are they speaking? they're speaking a very interesting language that has Kyrgyz, and then you talk to the Germans, oh my God, you talk to the Germans, they're spitting up, they get a mouthful of potatoes all the time, you know. They talk about the Americans coming over with a mouthful of potatoes. Well, anyhow, they're always spitting out everything, you know. And that's why they say, now spit it out. Say what you want to say. Spit it out. And let me have it, you know. And, you know, right in the eye. So, now, where does it come from? Who has the right, the authority, the knowledge, the genius, and all that good stuff to create a language, to create a symbols in the first place, and then create a meaning for the symbols, and then create a togetherness in the symbols, putting them together on words? And then in the early Hebrew writings, they didn't have any spaces, capital letters, or anything like that, or periods, or commas, or what have you. And so the word, the sentence, like the Germans, it was a pure run-on item. And you had to feel it to know what was going on. Now, that's a big step from no language, from no symbols at all. So now, we got all these neat symbols going on. Now, what's going on? What are we doing with these neat symbols? How are we going to use them to say, I love you? Now, all you got to do is look in their eyes and say, I love you. You know, that sick cow expression, you know. And you know that they mean, I love you. Now, how do you translate that? I love you. Like the dog. Dogs that are taught how to speak. And they say, I love you. You know? And we think that's so charming or so cute and so forth. But can you imagine what the early language was like? And can you imagine? Can you imagine why the early caveman would go and find a woman that pleased him and grab her by the hair and drag her home? Maybe she didn't want to leave the fire that she had. She had a rich daddy, you know, and he was providing her with all the food, and her mama did all the cooking, and all she had to do was a little sewing here and there, and or, you know, preparing the meat and what have you. But mama did all the work, and daddy did all of it, and she didn't want to have to take care of a whole family, and she didn't want to have to start having babies either, you know. I mean, she's about 8 or 9 years old. She didn't want to get off into a family type, you know. But they only lived how long?
13
13 years. 13 years, wasn't it? Something like that. Some very ugly short time. But they had a very short life. In the time of the medieval days, it was 31 years. In the time of Jesus, it was 30 years. And in the time of Sparta, it was 22 years. So quite likely, the early men lived very short lives because of what? Well, they didn't have enough to eat. They didn't have enough clothing to keep them from the cold or whatever, if there was any cold around. The animals liked the human flesh because it was very tasty, you know, very salty. And so the animals liked to eat the men, you know. And so if the men were out hunting and they didn't quite make it, there was nothing to take home for mama, you know. Not even human meat, you know, which they didn't care one way or the other. They would oftentimes slaughter. That's why they had cannibalism in the early days, you know. They thought nothing of flesh was flesh, you know. And it doesn't matter whether it's from a human being or from an animal, it was flesh, and that was okay. And so, but you see, time goes on, and a certain respect develops in language and in humanity and in man to woman and woman to man and children and in the head of the community to them. And they had to communicate with one another. They couldn't just go, you know, which a lot of people do today. Little children do that. They communicate quite nicely. And they communicate quite elaborately with what they are doing with their friends who do not speak their language. Take 8 different languages and throw them in a sandbox. And within 5 minutes, they'll all be communicating with one another very handsomely and very nicely. Now, where do they get the language? Well, the little children just listen to their hearts. And I believe that the early creators of mathematics, the early creators of languages, listen to their hearts. And as they listen to their heart, they said words from their heart that were able to be communicated somehow. And when people said the same word often enough, then that word became a word representative of that. Mum, mum, mum. You wave your hand at the other person and say, oomph, come, 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 hum, 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 hum. You know. And then, drink, you know, put something to your mouth to say, drink that you're thirsty, and say, ooga goo, ooga goo, ooga goo. So ooga goo became drink, you know. And, you know, you didn't have to have a lot of words because you didn't have a great philosophical system to share. And you merely were sharing life blessing instances between yourself. Now, language came and language developed and language revealed itself with a certain amount of magic, you'd have to say. But I'd like to say this to you. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Everything I've just told you, I don't believe it. I don't believe that a divine being in us, as us, through us, would create us as an ignoramus, unable to communicate. Even dogs know how to communicate. Even dogs know how to talk to each other, and wolves know how to howl and bring the pack together. True, it's primitive. But if these animals, which are, so to speak, primitive according to man, why shouldn't man come along with a much more sophisticated communication system right from the get-go, right from the start? And I believe he did. And I believe he did. And I believe that you do. And I believe that the complexity of our ability to speak, our ability to share ideas, and this is the most complex thing of all. We have the ability to think about something that doesn't exist. And then we have the ability to think about it strong enough and reveal it already existing. Now, isn't that something? That is really quite spectacular, quite marvelous. Well, within each one of us is a divinity that knows all these things. And when we let go and let that divinity in us reveal itself to us, through us, as us, we know all things and we have all knowledge available to us. When the early mathematicians thought of mathematics, they did not think of mathematics as we do, as a matter of just adding and subtracting. Truly they did, though. They thought of mathematics for whatever it was. It was a comfortable thing to work with. Do you know that the early astronomers, astronomy, looking at the stars and counting them, the early astronomers would lay all night long counting the stars? Can you imagine what happened? And then they get all confused. Now, where did we start? Where did we leave off? You know, which area? By those three big stars together there, and now we call it Orion's Belt. You know, and so they gave names to segments of the sky so that they could portion it off, and so they could count the stars with their eyes. And then, in the daytime, they saw less stars than they did at night. And on dark nights, they saw more stars than they ever thought possible. And then other people came along and developed the microscope, the telescope, and other things to look down and look up. And what did they find? They found even more stars. Oh, now I got to start all over again, you know? And they did that. They did that many, many times. Many, many times. That's why astronomers are a united organization. They have a good union, really. And so their union says, okay, you take this quadrant of the sky, you take that quadrant, you take this, so that you wouldn't have to worry about the whole sky. You just concern yourself with your quadrant. And so their mathematical schemes, their use of numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0. And hey, why not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, X, P, D, Q, D, R, you know, some other numbers that go on beyond. But isn't it interesting when we were children, the national debt was very big, but not so big. But it was as big as some people's income is today. Isn't that interesting? As big as some people's income. And some people, when the Mergenthalers were millionaires, those millions were lots of money. Lots of money. They could do much with it. And Carnegie, I believe it was Carnegie or somebody, gave all the libraries to every city in the United States, every city of a certain size. And they built a beautiful library out of stone and brick and everything, a public library. And they stand today, most of them. Really magnificent. Well, now, what an ability to give. What an ability to share. Not that we're talking about the philanthropic aspects of it right now, but it's an eleemosynary program that's so fantastic, so great, the givingness of it. Now, what about our numbers? Where'd 1, 2, and 3 come from? 4, 5, and 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, where did they come from? And who says what it is? And who says that when you start adding them, subtracting them, multiplying them, dividing them, when you start using the square root of them, when you start using the trigonometry and geometry of them, I mean, you can go on ad infinitum to the magic of it, but we have a mind that is so, that I don't like to say that, we have the brain power, which is so fantastic, it can draw from our mind the unknown and the unknowable, which of course becomes known once we know it. And we can do that, and we do that. And we are a magical being. We are magical people. We are magical. We are so wonderful. It is so fantastic. And we should really be thankful for that and say, hey, I like this. I like being so smart. I like being a nerd. I like being a genius. I like being God. I like being the all. I like me. I'm whole and perfect. I'm fantastic. Isn't that wonderful? Thank you for your attention today. Thank you for your awareness of who I really am. I really am the God that you think I am, because I'm your reflection. And I think that you've done a very good job. Thank you so much. Have a nice afternoon, and know that I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.